WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Lyndon Johnson was not the only American president to have a secret taping system in the Oval Office. Nixon had one, too. Terry spoke with historian Stanley Cutler about how it worked.
Nixon's recording system was a little bit different than LBJ's. LBJ's
right.
was button-activated. He had to press a button and start recording. Nixon's system was voice-activated, so as soon as he started talking, the system started recording.
Right.
Do you think that everybody in his office was aware that their conversation with Nixon were being recorded?
Well, Haldeman knew because Haldeman helped install the system. People such as Kissinger, Ehrlichman did not know at first. I think over time they sense this. There are times when, for example, I think there's some strong evidence that Ehrlichman knew before he acknowledged knowing that the taping system existed. But with others who came in, they did not know. I think Haig knew from the outset. But these are indeed, as you said, a voice activated. I think at times it's very clear to me that there are some contrived conversations, particularly between Nixon and Haldeman, where they're talking for the record. Oh, I didn't know this. I don't know that. They're talking about deep black holes, you know, which is a kind of, it turns out to be a code for the plumbers. You know, sometimes you have a tape recorder going, and sometimes you then become oblivious to it, too, and you just talk.
We'll hear more about what was said in Nixon's Oval Office after this break. This is Fresh Air. Let's continue Terry's conversation with historian Stanley Cutler. Nixon's White House tapes offer a far more detailed picture than we've ever had of his involvement in Watergate. Stanley Cutler transcribed and edited the tapes for his book, Abuse of Power. The first Nixon tapes, about 40 hours worth, were released in April of 1974. Nixon tried to prevent the release of the remaining tapes, but over 200 more hours of recordings were released as a result of a lawsuit filed by Cutler and the group Public Citizen. The tapes still can't leave the archives, so we can't play them on the radio. Cutler says these recordings provide an overwhelming record of Nixon's obstruction of justice and expose a level of culpability far greater than imagined 25 years ago. One of the big questions about Watergate is, why did Nixon try to cover it up instead of letting other people take the fall?
I think I've got another dimension to it. I think that the standard answer that I and others have often given for the institution of a cover-up is because there was a need to protect the president from any revelation of the so-called White House horrors of the first term. That is, the existence of the plumbers, which engaged in illegal break-ins, and the Houston plan, which also authorized illegal break-ins, the IRS abuses, the enemies list, and so forth. Those are the standard reasons given for the cover-up. But here in these new tapes, Nixon on two occasions, one's when he's talking about the plumber's break-in of Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office, and a second when he's talking about the authorization of illegal break-ins under the so-called Houston plan. He says, "I cannot admit that the president of the United States authorized illegal acts." It was a kind of psychological moment. Here was the man who for 25 years had championed himself as the advocate of law and order. The man of high-toned moral principles is now going to go out and admit that he authorized second-story men to engage in illegal break-ins for his administration. It was really more that he could bear to face.
What about Henry Kissinger? How does he come out looking in the tapes? I mean, Nixon thinks Kissinger is leaking to the press at some point.
They have
a quarrel between them about that. But what was Kissinger in on, and what did he actively participate
well,
in?
Well, you know, there is an obvious tension between these two men. Nixon is very unhappy, you know, when Kissinger gets a Nobel Prize, why not me? After all, didn't Kissinger take his orders from Nixon? He would resent if Kissinger became Man of the Year on Time magazine cover. There was a rivalry there. Well, throughout these tapes, his reference to Kissinger asking for wiretaps of his key National Security Council aides to find out who's leaking to the media, and Kissinger is up to his ears in that, and Nixon keeps reminding him of it. that. There are conversations, though, that in the eyes of many people today don't serve Kissinger very well. He appears to be the ultimate toady, buttering up the president. There is a conversation on the night of April 30th after Nixon has fired Haldeman and Ehrlichman, his key aides, and Kissinger has his conversation with him and tells Nixon again how great he is and that Watergate doesn't mean anything. History's going to remember Nixon as the great man of peace and so forth. Yet in his own memoirs, at the same time, in his diary, which appears in his memoirs, Kissinger says for the night of April 30th that he knew that Nixon was dead in the water at that point, that the administration was paralyzed and probably on the way out.
It's interesting to read some of Nixon's anti-Semitic language in his tirades. He says to Haldeman, "Bob, please get me the names of the Jews, you know, the big mm-hmm. Jewish contributors of the Democrats. Could we please investigate some of the expletives?" Then he criticized a reporter and FBI executive saying, "They're both Jews, and that has nothing to do with it, but it at least gives you a feeling of the possible motivation mm-hmm. deep down of the liberal leftists." Mm-hmm. Did you find this kind of anti-Semitic language recurring a lot in Nixon's
Well,
it
recurs a good deal throughout these tapes. There's the people who leak in government are Jews. McGovern has big Jewish contributors. Well, you know, Nixon did too. He kind of ignores that. Now, you know, on this subject, his defenders and his associates, some of whom are Jewish. But by the way, you know, one should point out that he did have an ample representation of Jews in the government, Henry Kissinger, Leonard Garman, White House aide, and so forth. They want to point out that they'd like to point out that Nixon's anti-Semitism never became, quote, operational. Unquote. Well, I never know quite exactly what to make of that. What do they mean? That Nixon never ordered a Holocaust? He never ordered the elimination of people? The fact is that he used this language. It's used to express his anger, his frustration, his envy. It's not very becoming.
The last tape that Nixon made in the White House, the last tape that you've transcribed for your piece.
Well, I think it's the last tape that he made in the White House, the last recording we have. It's on July 12th, the day that Butterfield revealed the existence of the tapes.
So his final words, Nixon's final words in a conversation with Kissinger are, "Keep fighting." Mm-hmm. What's the context of that conversation and the significance of Nixon's words?
Well, it's a conversation with he and Kissinger often engage in these kind of mutual support conversations of each trying to buck up the spirits of the other. And the word I find that conversation fascinating because the word fight runs through his memoirs like a red thread. Battle, conflict. He was a combative man. He saw life as a constant struggle and a constant battle and a constant fight. And I was struck by the fact that these are almost his last words in this last recorded conversation. Keep fighting. The fact is that the man, when you think about it, from May 73 on, Nixon realizes the consequences for him, that if any of this cover-up is ever revealed, uncovered, that he is in serious trouble. He will probably have to resign. Yet he fights. He fights desperately. On the night of April 30th, when he fires Haldeman and Ehrlichman, there are all these very depressed, distraught conversations he has. Yet you look at the conversations of May 1st, if you listen to them, and listening to them is very much different than the spoken word often. He's very full of fight, full of energy. He's determined to fight on. And the fact is that he kept fighting from the time this taping system closed down in July 73 almost until the day he resigned. And finally, then he realized how hopeless it was. But the conversation between Kissinger and Nixon is really a kind of mutual support one.
Stanley Cutler transcribed and edited the Nixon tapes for his book, Abuse of Power. He's currently working on a Broadway play about Nixon, scheduled to open this fall.